Welcome back to Via the Source, where you can get news about the entire NFL and, of course, the Miami Dolphins. Fins up, here's Steven, your host.
What's up, guys? Hey, it's November 26th. I'm Steven Mosso. As always, you're listening to Via the Source. Now, today's episode, we're going to be talking a little bit about the Dolphins' loss to the Cleveland Browns. We're going to be discussing a little bit of quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, my thoughts on him. If you listen to the Dolphins Talk episode, I host an episode there once a week. If you heard that, there's going to be a lot of similar points. So just giving you guys a little heads up. We're going to be discussing Patrick Laird and the running back situation, and just some other thoughts about the team. Now, so to start it off, the Dolphins lost to the Cleveland Browns by a score of 41-24. And this was a very dominating win for the Cleveland Browns. It was one of those ones that almost had a feel, especially in the first half, of one of those Baltimore Ravens-esque games where the Dolphins just get completely blown out. So it was really in control, at least in the first half, for the Cleveland Browns. Now, I will say there was a point made by the commentators in this game where one of them said to the other, well, the Cleveland Browns have to be happy with this win, right? They're back on track and they're flowing well, or something along those lines. And the other one said, well, not really, that this was a game they should have had, and it seems like they didn't take full control of this game in a way they should have. And I agree with that point and that sentiment. It was still kind of a rocky game for the Browns, though the score doesn't suggest it was. I really think it was, but in this game, at least from the Dolphins' perspective, they were just completely lackluster, especially defensively in this game. So we discuss this game, and we first have to look at what the Cleveland Browns players were doing. Baker Mayfield, 327 yards, 3 touchdowns, and he had a very bad pick. Nick Chubb, dominant on the ground. He had 106 yards. He also had another 58 through the air, so it was a big day from Nick Chubb. But Kareem Hunt was also, at least from a fantasy perspective, pretty productive in this game as well. He had 37 yards rushing, a touchdown, and 9 yards receiving. So a nice little game for both of the running backs here. But the main story was the receivers, and none other than former Dolphin in his revenge game. One of the most predictable things in all of football, Jarvis Landry balled out. He had 148 yards, 10 catches, 2 touchdowns in this game. His good friend over there, Odell Beckham, also had a good outing, 84 yards and a touchdown for him. That the main one came on a big 35-yard touchdown where he was just somehow wide open. Now, we go and we look at the Dolphins' side of the ball offensively. Ryan Fitzpatrick, 214 yards, 2 touchdowns, and he did have 2 picks. As we move on to the rushing, Fitzpatrick led the way there as well. He had 5 carries for 45 yards, and he had a nice little touchdown where he ducked his head down. Kind of those scary plays that I don't know if a 37-year-old veteran quarterback should be making, but Ryan Fitzpatrick is one of one when it comes to doing what he does at this age. It's pretty admirable to watch. The guy is completely fired up, and I think Travis Wingfield at Wingfield NFL, if you haven't followed him, he made a good point, and it was something that I kind of said myself a week prior, that I think that the leadership and the way that the Dolphins admire Ryan Fitzpatrick right now is why they're keeping him in and not switching to Josh Rosen. I think if you were to switch to Josh Rosen right now, the players wouldn't sit right with that just because the way they look at Fitzpatrick, the way that he fires up the team, he just means too much to them right now, even though they are losing these games. So Fitzpatrick was the best rusher on the team, which is a strange thing to hear. Kalen Ballage, another weak performance for him. I think this is the last week that he gets the larger amount of carries on this team. He had 7 carries for 13 yards, just nothing working out for him. Patrick Laird, though, if you're looking for a glimmer of hope, another good outing from Patrick Laird, and I really do think that he is going to step up and take a bigger chunk of the carries. Cameron Wolf of ESPN said that there is going to be more Patrick Laird involvement, so I know I'm the self-proclaimed leader of the Laird hype train. Well, I think now it begins. I really do, and I think next week will be the first time we see him in a starting role. He had 3 carries for 20 yards in this game. That's an average of 6.7. Again, very small sample size, but he fell very close to the end zone on one of them. So I do think Patrick Laird, going to take over this starting spot, but I will discuss him as well as his future as we dig in deeper to the episode a little bit further on. Now, for the receiving side for the Dolphins, DeVante Parker continues to be the best wideout on the team. You know, Preston Williams is down. DeVante Parker is definitely making the most of it. He is on pace to have over 1,000 yards this season. That is no small feat for somebody who is called a bust, for somebody who is called fragile. DeVante Parker is coming out here and he is looking very energetic. He had 6 catches for 91 yards. And my favorite play from him in this game was a very simple play. I don't know if it was an out route. I don't know if it was a curl. I don't remember exactly, but basically he was facing the quarterback and he caught it just shy of the line, the first down line. And what he did instead was he kind of jump hop backwards, made sure he got the play and picked up the first down. But just his awareness, his speed, his critical thinking just right there on that spot is something that we haven't seen from DeVante Parker. We have all seen those acrobatic catches he makes, the contested ones. After the catch has always sort of been a little bit more of an issue for him, but this season has changed that a lot. So I'm very excited about DeVante Parker. I think his confidence level, which is such a big thing with him, is just at an all-time high. You're getting all these little snapbacks on Twitter where he's replying to guys who doubted him, saying to, you know, keep those apologies. He doesn't want to hear it. I just think this fired up version of DeVante Parker is just an awesome thing to see. Somebody who I think was so criticized so heavily, unjustly, because of injuries, when his performances may not have been great, but they weren't as terrible as people made it out to be. I think people were far too hard on DeVante Parker, and it seems like it's finally starting to connect for him, and I'm very happy to see it. So just summarize this game. It was one where the Dolphins looked flat at the beginning, and though they picked it up towards the end, it just wasn't enough for them to come back in this game. There was a part where it seemed like there was a potential for a comeback, but it just never really, they dug themselves too deep in a hole. They looked too lethargic early on. The defense was a problem. The offense, mostly the rushing. Again, Kalen Ballage does not deserve any carries on this team. Maybe he could find some sort of resurgence on another team, but I just don't see Kalen Ballage having any sort of long-term value for the Dolphins. So that will be my kind of segue into this next point about Patrick Laird. I'm very impressed with him, but I still think the Dolphins are going to be looking running back in this upcoming draft. You know, you look at guys like Jonathan Taylor, who look terrific. There's just a ton of running back talent that you could find deeper in the draft. I don't think Taylor falls to the past the second round like people are suggesting. I think he's going to go in the first round. But I do think the Dolphins need to get a kind of superstar potential running back in someone. I do not think Patrick Laird is quite there yet, but I could definitively say that when I look at him, he just looks like a Swiss Army knife, and that is a very valuable tool to have on any team. So I don't mean to undermine him and say that just because I don't think he's a Saquon Barkley or I don't think that he's a Christian McCaffrey, that doesn't mean that he is somebody who belongs on the bench. I think he could carve out a very nice role, and that could be even more realistic because we talk about the Patriot way and the Patriot scheme so much with his Dolphins because so much of the staff have come from New England. So Patrick Laird, it surprises me that the Dolphins throughout this season have been so heavy on using one running back and sticking with that guy. Early on, it was Kenyon Drake, early on it was Kalen Ballage, then they switched to Kenyon Drake, then they switched to Mark Walton, but I'm very curious as to why they never really went full on with the running back by committee that the Patriots are known so much by. The Patriots, Rex Burkhead, they had Deion Lewis way back, they had James White. They were always splitting the carries amongst these guys. It was never really one guy was the lone and lead back. Maybe they had that role, the Sony Michel, the LeGarrette Blount, the guy that you knew was going to be the goal line back or the guy who got the early down duties. But there was always a way for each of those guys to carve out a fairly valuable role on the team. So I'm very curious as to why the Dolphins did not take that approach. You saw that Kalen Ballage wasn't being successful, but yet throughout the season, Kenyon Drake wasn't as involved in the passing game as I thought he should be. The guy is terrific as a receiving back in my eyes. Patrick Laird, like I said, a Swiss Army knife. You don't have to strictly use him as a running back. He can be somebody who's effective on third downs out of the backfield. Miles Gaskin, I'm sure, could be utilized differently. I'm very curious as to why the Dolphins are so insistent on getting Kalen Ballage all the carries, and for him to be the same person who's receiving the ball as well, it just doesn't make sense to me. So again, that is why that was a head scratcher to me, but that also is the same reason why if the Dolphins do indeed go for the running back, go for that big home run hitter in the draft, they could still end up having Patrick Laird in a very valuable spot, at least from a production standpoint. So the Patrick Laird hype train is in full effect, full steam right now, and I'm hoping that would even carry on into next season, and I wouldn't bet against it. Now, we dive into the segment about Tua Tagovailoa, very serious injury. Now, again, if you listen to the Dolphins Talk episode that I hosted, this is all going to sound very familiar. So, to run by first, what I think of quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. Of course, I was very big on Josh Rosen. I don't think that he has the time to cement himself as a franchise quarterback here. I don't think the Dolphins view him as that anymore. And I think the Dolphins love quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. Where I stand, I wasn't necessarily a fan of Tua before this season, but I was very aware that how great he was. You know, that was a very obvious thing. If you watch college football, you know the guy was terrific at such a young age, and he came in with very high expectations. So, of course, I knew the Tua was good, but I hadn't really dived into his film that much. I hadn't really watched the interviews. I didn't know what kind of person we were necessarily dealing with here until this season. Of course, all the Tank for Tua talk, that changed all that. I fell in love with the guy. On film, the guy is a field general. And since high school, the guy has been terrific. Of course, that national championship game in college, the guy has a terrific arm, a great ability with his feet to move around in the pocket, makes the right reads. It's really hard to find a knock on Tua other than that he's on such a great team and that could be making him look better. Aside from that, it's very hard to find knocks on this quarterback. Now, from a personal standpoint, that is where he stood out so much to me. I think he is such a good kid. The way people talk about him, it seems like he's always the person first. Like, he's just such a good leader. The kind of vibes he gives off, the kind of person he is what really stands out so much about quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, and I agree that the guy just seems like a terrific person. Now, he went down with a very, very significant hip injury, one that I'm no medical professional, I'm no expert, but I've read a ton of articles, I've been studying football since I was a kid, so I am very aware when it comes to these certain injuries about what kind of implications they could carry on through a person's career. So after reading articles by Pro Football Doc, after reading and watching videos by Brian Sutterer, MD, check him out on YouTube, he's great too. This is a very serious injury that even though all the reports right now are very positive, it's one that you still have to be cautious about. So while I'm hoping for the best, if all signs point to him making a full recovery, and that's what we're starting to see, then I'm all for the Dolphins going and using that first of their three first round picks on quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. But I have heard people saying right now that they should still go out and get him. And to them, I say that you must understand the severity of this injury. Pro Football Doc said it will certainly affect his draft stock and could have career-long implications. Brian Sutterer, who's also a doctor on sports injuries, said that when it comes to this sort of injury, you primarily have to be thinking about their quality of life, that it isn't even about football at that standpoint. And when that kind of sentence is said, that you must worry about their quality of life, that should tell you how serious of an injury it is. So just hearing right now that he is expected to make a full recovery isn't enough for me to say that I'm just full on in on it yet. I'd have to see it with my own eyes, and I'm very hopeful that he could return to the person that he was before. Now, last little thing about quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, and I said this in the Dolphins Talk episode as well, was that there was a video of him in the hospital. Of course, this is right after he suffers an injury that could cost him the ability to play the sport he trained for his whole life. It's right after he suffered an injury that may have potentially cost him millions of dollars in guaranteed money. That's money that could set up his family for generations to come. And he was in his hospital bed after that injury, and he was playing a guitar, singing songs, and laughing with his friends. Now, if that doesn't show you what kind of quarterback he is, I really think we could all learn a valuable lesson from this young quarterback from Hawaii. For him to be in such positive headspace in that sort of situation, it's just remarkable to me. And I think that's something that we should all be striving to be more like Tua in that sense. Now, those are my thoughts on him. I hope he recovers well, and I hope it's to the point where I feel confident in the Dolphins viewing him as a franchise quarterback. Now, the last topic in today's episode is because I saw a tweet, and forgive me because I don't know, I can't find the tweet again, but it was basically saying that Jarvis Landry showing us again how much of a loser he is because he stood down cornerback Nick Needham, who's an undrafted cornerback. And I don't understand that tweet. When I see stuff like that, I wonder if people on Twitter are conscious of what goes on in football games, if they played football games, and if they know how football works. And first, you have to look at what Jarvis Landry is. Jarvis Landry isn't some physical specimen. He isn't somebody with 4.3 speed. He isn't someone who's 6.5. Jarvis Landry is a pretty ordinary guy when you're looking at him compared to other receivers. Yet Jarvis Landry plays with such fire. He plays with such anger. He plays with such tenacity. I think if you remove that from the equation, Jarvis Landry isn't in the NFL. That he doesn't reach that point without that little fire that's burning inside of him. So when I see people saying that, oh, you shouldn't stare down an undrafted cornerback, NFL players don't care who's lined up against them. They're going to stare down whoever they want. I don't get it. You have to be playing with this aggression in your mind, with that kind of arrogance, with that sort of just, that is how football is. I mean, I love to see it as a fan when these players are snapping back at each other. You can't just go out there and hit somebody as hard as you can and not be aggressive towards them. So when I see stuff like that, I mean, hate Jarvis Landry all you want. I understand if you don't like him because he what he said during his departure from Miami, if you think he's arrogant, all that stuff, I understand it. But if you're going to be okay with guys hitting each other at full speed, and yet you're going to draw the line at him staring down a defender, I'm pretty sure Nick Needham wasn't even mad about the stare down. That's something that happens. I mean, Myles Garrett swung a helmet at somebody, you know? People dive at each other's knees, and you're mad about a stare down? I don't get it. I mean, that's just football to me. If you play football, they always say that if you're playing scared, then you're going to get hurt. So if you're not playing scared, you have to be playing pretty aggressively. And now maybe, of course, Jarvis Landry is on the other side of the spectrum when it comes to being a little bit more, extravagant, he showcases his emotions a lot more, and sometimes it costs him penalties. Oh, okay, I get that. But like I said, Jarvis Landry isn't Jarvis Landry without that. And I think that people look at NFL players as almost as if they're dolls. Like, they want to completely control and make these guys whatever they want. They want them to be robots. And I don't get it. It really doesn't make sense to me. People got mad at Devontae Parker his whole career because the guy looked lethargic, or because he wasn't showing emotion, that he didn't care about the game. People were mad at Jay Cutler his whole career because he wasn't making it obvious that he was a leader. Same thing could be said about Aaron Rodgers. But then when you see guys like Jarvis Landry staring someone down, all of a sudden they're a loser. When you see Odell Beckham swinging at a net because he's frustrated that he is being over dramatic or that he is a loose cannon, I don't get it. These are humans at the end of the day. They are required to be in a mind state for their job that not many other people can relate to, and that's something that you cannot control how they're going to act. And I don't get it. You have to kind of accept that those kind of things are going to come with it. And I'm not condoning the violent acts, of course, like the ones that Myles Garrett did, or if you think that some of the stuff that Odell Beckham does is a little too far out there and it hurts the team, I understand that. But at the same time, those are kind of, at times, some of the stuff that you have to deal with if you're playing a sport like this. And I know there's a bunch of good examples across the NFL of guys who don't lash out. And of course, in an ideal situation, you'd want a guy who never does that. But that is not how life is. That is not how humans are. You have to kind of accept that this is what's going to happen. So guys, that's how I'm going to wrap it up. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Shady Steven. Please follow the podcast account on Twitter. I've been using that more and more. That is at Via The Source. But that is how I'm going to wrap it up. Until next time, guys, I'm Steven Masso. This was Via The Source.